Leading off with the big story of the day, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with Tyler Palumbis and D-Man.
Hey, George, you guys reportedly dipped your toe in the pool for Matthew Stafford, so logically you'd be interested in Deshaun Watson. I'm curious how aggressive you would make a bid for him, and if you've already discussed that behind the scenes in terms of what you would do.
Yes, I mean, I can't discuss other players that are under contract. I appreciate the question, but, you know, I've said before, we're going to be aggressive. We're going to be in every deal, you know, and doesn't mean we're going to make that deal, but we're going to look into everything, whether it's a quarterback, whether it's a defensive lineman, you know, anything to help our football team, we're going to pursue.
Bears be walking in the crib and everything.
Had to be asked. Had to be asked. And after we got through the internet guy and the blogger and I think somebody who works in the cafeteria, it was my turn.
Oh, congratulations for waiting long enough.
Gotta use your patience, Tyler. And I love why and how GMs and coaches always will deflect as if the quarterback is on the same level as, you know, defensive linemen and place kickers.
Right, but see, they don't always deflect. Most of the time, they do not. Most of the time, they acknowledge that this is our guy. They go out of their way to make everybody know that, hey, this guy's not going anywhere. This is the leader of our football team. So when they start deflecting, when they start comparing him to other players on the football team,
good pickup.
That's when you know something's up.
Good pickup. And let me go to Fangio. By the way, I almost didn't even make the Fangio Zoom cut. I had to throw it in after the, hey, just a few more, fellas. You know, so, all right, here we go.
Coach, you've spoken in the past about how important competition is to raise the level of play.
By the way, for the record, I've never heard Fangio say that. I just assume he has said that
good for
at
you.
Some point. Yeah,
yeah, do a step the narrative the way you wanted it to go.
I'm just assuming that he wants things to be competitive.
I'm sure you've listened to me talking about a competition in the quarterback room.
Yeah, right, yeah. Exactly. You just sort of assume the premise and go from there.
Spoken in the past about how important competition is to raise the level of play. I'm curious what your strategy is this coming year to raise the level of competition in the quarterback room.
Well, obviously, we're always looking to bring in players.
Really? Is that what you were thinking when you brought in Jeff Driscoll? Was that really? That was the Jeff Driscoll thing. Blake Bortles, Rippon, that's what you were thinking. Okay.
Oppositions that can raise the level of competition. And, you know, the quarterback is no different in that regard.
Except last year. Except last year it was different.
Well, last year was about empowering Drew Locke. Now it's about finding Drew Locke's replacement.
Right, because, correct me if I'm wrong, Andy Dalton was available last year as well.
Sure. No, they went out of their way to make sure that Drew Locke didn't have any sort of threat at all last year.
This is like listening to the morning show where you say that there can only be one, aside from Trevor Lawrence, who doesn't count as a quarterback, but there can only be one quarterback. So Zach Wilson's okay. So we like to raise the level of competition at every position, including quarterback, except for last year. Okay.
At all positions, that can raise the level of competition. And, you know, the quarterback is no different in that regard.
Except last year.
You know, until we get, until Drew proves to be.
Yeah, there it was.
What's going on here
there
right now?
There it was.
What's happening right at this point?
Did you need to hear anything else? There it was.
I'll play it again. Here we go.
And, I'm not even saying it.
You know, the quarterback is no different in that regard.
And?
You know, until we get. Or until Drew proves to be the next.
So until we get.
Whoopsie.
Till he
proves. Wait, I think I shouldn't have said that. I don't think I was supposed to say until we get. Internal dilemma. How do I get out of this one? I think if I just say until Drew does it, everything's going to be okay. Nobody's going to notice.
No.
Nobody will notice that I said until we get.
Nobody's going to notice.
Or until Drew.
How long was that pause, by the way? What are we talking about?
You know, he was internally saying,
recalibrate.
Time to recover.
A 1.6 second pause in the answer.
Did you really see that? Like, that's literally what it was?
Oh, that's funny.
All right, let's hear it again.
Our back is no different in that regard. You know, until we get. Or until Drew proves to be the next. Great quarterback, you know, the ones that the Denver franchise has been used to in years past, or certain teams around the league, you guys know where they are used to. We're going to always try and bring in competition.
That last year.
But I have confidence that Drew can continue to improve.
Oh, man.
Wow. And there was everything you needed to hear. There in 1.6 seconds as he realized that he just told everybody the way the organization feels about Drew Locke. But, hey, if you want to believe them when they tell you, oh, he's doing a lot of good things, he's on the right track, if you choose to hear that, okay, you could choose to hear that, but I'm telling you right now that that's the real story.
Yeah.
That's the real story. Everything else, all the other positive stuff that they're saying right now, all that is them recognizing that, hey, it's probably 60-70% odds that Drew Locke is still our quarterback next year.
Right.
Because it's hard to find a replacement. It's hard to go out in free agency. It's hard to trade. It's hard to draft somebody. So he might be our guy. So we have to cover our tracks.
Hedge our bets.
Okay. You could choose to listen to that part of it, or you could hear honesty. And that was honesty.
Right. I'm going to use our guy, Zach Bye, just for a second. And
days in a row.
It will relate to this situation, I promise. But you pointed out yesterday that there was a really cool article written in a trade online website that everybody in radio reads, especially sports talk radio, about Zach. That was terrific.
Yep.
Absolutely
fantastic.
Terrific. And if you read the details of the story with Zach, without me going into all the specifics, what you'll see is somebody who was determined and gave himself no other option because his passion was doing this particular job and was willing to do extraordinary things. Extraordinary to make it happen.
Oh, without a doubt.
Now, we happen to be in Denver, Colorado, which is, I mean, one of the greatest places on earth, period. Never mind a place to do what we do. I mean, it is spectacular. There is a reason. Now, you grew up here, obviously, but how many of your teammates or ex-teammates or guys live here when they could live anywhere in the world, but they choose to live here?
Yeah, it's very, very unusual for guys to actually make home out of the state that they're playing in. When you get to the offseason, people scatter. They're everywhere. You can't get 10 guys together to work out even if you wanted to because everybody's gone. Not here. People make a full-time living out of Colorado.
So to be able to work in Denver, Sandy's not from Denver. Mike's not from Denver. I'm not from Denver. Zach's not from Denver. And to Cecil Lammy's credit, Cecil is from Colorado. But you see, I think, where I'm going, that this is such a desirable place to be, to live, to work, that people wanting to do, like, the job that any of us have, and, you know, there's you, and I will make this argument, to be sitting in that chair is way harder than sitting in this chair, because you got to play in the NFL or be a professional athlete, whatever. So I give you and all you guys the most credit, because there's no way on God's green I could ever, you know, do what you did. You deserve to be there, no doubt about it. And it's competitive to be in that seat, because there's so many guys that want to be here. But it's also incredibly competitive to sit here and do this. And for Zach to come from Albany, New York, and there's so many people in this market who live here and have been here longer than Zach that would love what Zach does, it's ridiculous. So for Zach to have so much determination and so much work ethic and be so good to come from out of town and do what he's done for the past few years, are you kidding? I couldn't be prouder.
Oh, absolutely.
To be on
incredible.
The same team as Zach Bye.
No doubt about it.
The guy's an animal.
And it wasn't just there. It was how he got to get the opportunity to even have the call to get here, working, stocking the shelves at the grocery store at 5 a.m. and doing karaoke or with trivia at night. You know, all the other jobs that it took just to have a crack in the door at a local radio station where he might have his voice heard once or twice a week.
So not only did Zach do the best by him, but he does the best by all of us. Because what, are we going to sleep on things? Are we going to be lazy with our jobs when we know there's a dude in Albany that we've never heard of before that is willing to do what he does to come in and compete with us?
Yeah.
And be part. And by the way, being part of a team is also being willing to compete with the people on your team as well. Now, you shouldn't be a jerk to the people you're competing with. I mean, theoretically, you're not, right? You've talked about it.
You've
talked about how you had to make everybody better.
Some of my best friends in life are the guys that we took each other's job five or six times over.
But if you want to see poor performance or performance that's not as sharp as it could be, lower the level of competition amongst the people that are already involved where you're at. And you know what, Tyler? I've worked at stations like that too. And not only are those people weak, it brings down. Now, you might think you're working as hard as you can and all that. You may be able to sell yourself on that. But I've worked at places, Tyler, where people had just given up.
Sure.
Or didn't try or whatever. So there is zero in my 34 years of broadcasting. The best thing about me going to Syracuse was not the school, not the professors or the teacher or the basketball team or Jim Boeheim, which we'll get to later. But it was the level of competition within the college rate, not the professional station. I got to a professional station. I couldn't believe how lazy those people were. It was the level of competition within the college station, trying to one-up everybody else and be better than everybody else at the college radio station.
All right, bring it back.
That raised everything up. The Broncos made an insane mistake last year to not bring the level of competition in the quarterback room as high as they possibly could. They did not do Drew Locke any favors. They needed a Zach Bye. They got Jeff Driskel. They needed somebody to really, you know, put some fire under people's butts. They brought in Brett Rippon and later Blake Bortles. I mean, they whiffed. And so I have a little sympathy here for Drew Locke, because I think Drew Locke is a competitor. I don't think you can get to where he is without being a competitor, but he simply wasn't pushed.
I don't have sympathy for him, but for that, I mean, you gotta go out there and compete with yourself. Zach Bye wasn't out there competing with anybody else. He was competing with himself. Zach Bye wasn't out there worried about somebody else and how hard they were working. Zach Bye was just gonna go get the job.
I don't buy that at all.
That is not an excuse even remotely for Drew Locke.
I bet if you ask Zach, I bet you anything, Tyler, he would tell you. Working at this station, though, and being around other people helps raise his game as well.
Sure, I'm not going to argue the fact that competition can bring out the best in any individual. Without a doubt, it can. And it's easy to get lackadaisical. It's easy to get comfortable and feel like, nobody's out there to take my job. But if that's the attitude that you've got, then you're probably not the guy anyways. You shouldn't need that. You don't need somebody else to tell you that you need to work harder. That's not what it takes. So, you know, for Drew Locke, I mean, okay, if you think that he didn't play at his best because he didn't have somebody behind him that was capable, I guess that's a red flag in its own right for me. That for me, that's not an excuse. That's a red flag in its own right. I don't need somebody to tell me how hard I work when nobody's watching. That's what means way more than the way I'm working when I've got all my strength coaches there or when my head coach is there. It's what I'm doing in the offseason on my own time, but I'm not required to be doing it.
All right, well, let me run something past you, okay? There was a time early on, you know, when I was doing what I was doing, where I actually kind of ascended too quickly. Like, I was 23 years old, and I was hired to be the main morning show host on a classic rock station. And my name's on the show. I'm the man. You know, that's it. Just by hook or by crook, I'm there. Tyler, I did not appreciate where I was at that time. And I thought I was working hard. I thought I was doing the right things. But I also took a lot of stuff for granted because of how easy it got to be there. I was humbled. I lost my job. I had to move. I had to kind of start all over, and it took a long time to sort of build back up. I was doing all right in Denver, got fired, had to go down to, you know, South Circle for 5 years. Humbled big time, and deeply appreciative of every shot that I got when I got back here on the Fan finally. And that's when it really sunk in. My point being,
you took that situation for granted. Like, and that was on you at that point in your life. And for Drew Locke to excuse poor play because he didn't have the right competition behind him, that's unacceptable to me.
But how do we know that if put into the right situation, Drew Locke's really going to take off?
Well, maybe he will, but it's not an excuse. I'm not giving him anything because somebody wasn't there telling him to work harder, telling him that he needed to play better, telling him to stop throwing interceptions. I mean, hey, man, if competition's going to bring out the best in him, that's fantastic, but it's definitely not an excuse. And honestly, I would look at your situation. I think you would look back on it in hindsight. If you would have approached that like you were striving for that job like you are today, acknowledging that there are a million people out there would have loved that job, you wouldn't need anybody in-house to push you. You would have just done it because that's what you should have done.
Yeah,
so you were young, you were a little bit immature.
I was. And, all and, those things.
Okay, so.
I didn't know.
Well, that's fine. I mean, if Drew Locke doesn't know that everybody in the world wants that job, I don't know. I don't know what to say. So
sometimes it happens. Some guys just sort of fall into things one way or the other.
Well, that's a red flag to me.
Well, okay, but I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt here that
he didn't have a good backup. That excuses his play.
He was never pressed. He throws an interception. He's going back in the game. What they did in Miami, I think, was so much better for the development of Tua Tagovailoa than Drew Locke got here. He wasn't afraid of anything here. Tua Tagovailoa had a much better developmental year than Drew Locke did last year.
I guess we'll see about that. He got benched multiple times. If that's good development, I don't know.
There was an element of if it's not working out, you're out of the game. Everybody sure. around here was walking on eggshells, not wanting to, like, you know, disrupt his psyche. It was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. And that's on the coaches and the personnel and the Broncos. And George Payton knows it. Big Fangio knows it, and we're not going to see it again.
Yeah.
Now, what
all
I
know
see?
Is it's not Jeff Driscoll's fault that Drew Locke didn't play good football.
Oh, I agree with you on that, of course. What's Jeff Driscoll going to do? He's just trying to have a job. What do you think? Jeff Driscoll's just happy to be employed. And he was being paid over $2 million a year to be the third-string quarterback of the Broncos.
I guess what bothers me a little bit in the way that you're painting that is that I've actually never thought that work ethic was Drew Locke's problem. I think that he's got a good work ethic. I think that guys in the building respect the way he's going about it. And when you're talking about you need somebody behind you to be pushing you so that you're on your P's and your Q's, well, to me, that's more like you're lackadaisical. And I don't think that Drew Locke is lackadaisical. I just think that he goes out there and he makes panic decisions and he puts his football team in a bad spot.
All right, Drew Locke throws an interception again in the first quarter in the red zone. He doesn't have to worry about, you know, not having that opportunity later on. He's going back in. Because, he's got to develop.
What he should have been worried about is if he's going to get that opportunity again next year or if he's going to get it the year after that.
Well,
because, buddy,
I'm sure he's thinking that now.
The pink slip isn't a literal thing. There is no literal pink slip. But every single day I'd come back to my locker after I had a bad game or if I had a bad practice. And I'm wondering if I was getting that metaphorical pink slip.
I understand.
I didn't need anybody to let me know.
Okay.
And I got that pink slip many times.
Great example. You learned that lesson quickly.
Sure.
There were no doubts about it.
I mean, in my third year.
You weren't on edge from the beginning?
Without a doubt, I was on edge.
You think Drew Locke's been on edge?
He should be. and if he needs somebody to tell him that, then that's a red flag.
And here we are. Ultimately, here we are. And you are absolutely correct. If you could just eat. I mean, this isn't even hard to read between the lines. Because they really don't know if they're going to be able to get Deshaun Watson. They don't know it. They probably don't know in terms of all these quarterbacks who their guy is. Probably not yet. They probably don't know it. They may have a feeling about it. They probably haven't settled on which of the, you know, Cam, Mitchell, Jacoby, Taylor, Andy Fitzpatrick's out there make the most sense. But one of those guys is coming.
No, but they know that they're actively trying to bring in somebody. And if you listen to the tone, you listen to the way these guys are talking, they weren't talking about this being Drew Locke's football team. They were talking about bringing in competition for him.
So, that's right.
So it doesn't matter who the specific guy is. They've made up their mind that they're actively pursuing Drew Locke's replacement. But they also recognize that it might not happen. That it's probably 60-70% that Drew Locke's actually going to be your quarterback next year. So we can't just go all in. We can't admit to everybody that, yeah, we're going for Deshaun Watson. We went after Matt Stafford. We're going after every single quarterback we can because we don't believe in Drew. No, you gotta hype him up a little bit so that his own teammates can at least attempt to believe in him.
Right. You have to have an escape hatch. Aside from that, you know, and we'll get into all the details of the presser, but that to me was the, you know, that to me is the big deal. You know, how are you going to set the tone and move forward? What's going to happen? There was a reason, Tyler, Drew Locke was there in the second round. I've been searching for it. I've been asking about it. I haven't completely understood it, but there is a reason. It's not like 31 other teams don't know what they're talking about or don't have football experts or, you know, whatever, especially teams that really needed a quarterback that particular year, like the Washington football team and the New York Giants, who selected Dwayne Haskins, which didn't work out, and Daniel Jones, which is not looking great. And why did those teams pass on Drew Locke?
I don't know. Why did they draft Dwayne Haskins.
I don't know.
It's not easy. It's not an exact science. So, I mean, I would easily argue as well on the positive side. I get why Drew Lock was drafted in the second round and not the fourth round. You look at all the positives and you say, okay, there's no doubt about it that this guy shouldn't have been sitting around until the fourth round for some team to pick him up. Drew Lock could easily be a franchise quarterback in the NFL. Had he capitalized on his opportunities, we wouldn't even be talking about this conversation right now. Had he had his second year like he did his first five games in his rookie year, nobody's sitting here having this conversation. So, you know, he's got a lot of pros. He's got a lot of cons. And where we're at right now today, unfortunately, it's not good enough. And in the NFL, George Payton, what's his one job? He has to get better at every single position, every single offseason. He has to make a decision. Is the guy I've got right now better than any available alternative? And right now, he's making the decision that there's probably alternatives out there that can do the job better than Drew Lock.
By the way, I have no doubt Drew Lock's hearing feedback like this. I have no doubt that he's aware of things. I have no doubt his family, which he's very close to, is aware of things. And when I'm listening to Zoakley earlier, they said, we really like Drew Lock. And I agree. I really like Drew Lock. I think you really like Drew Lock as a person. And we all want Drew Lock to succeed because that would be the best thing for the team.
Sure.
So nobody is actually rooting against Drew Lock. He doesn't show any of the terrible habits that Paxton Lynch had. I think he's a completely different person. He's not Jay Cutler, what some people like to compare him to. I think Drew Lock has most of the qualities that you'd want to see in your quarterback. But there was something missing. And we're all hoping it can bounce up. The question is, I mean, will he even get that opportunity this year?
He's going to have great opportunities still this year in all likelihood because the most likely thing that happens this year is not that you go out and you trade up to number two like I wanted to go get Zach Wilson. That's really, really hard. And you're probably going to have to give up the farm. It's not most likely that you're going to go out and trade for Deshaun Watson. Everybody's trying to trade for Deshaun Watson. The most likely thing that happens this offseason is that you go out and you sign Jacoby Brissett or Andy Dalton or whomever that's in that category. And if that's who they go out, Drew Lock should be looking at that like, oh, thank the Lord, because I can beat this guy. Mm-hmm. Seriously, if you're bringing in Jacoby Brissett, if you're bringing in Andy Dalton, I will rise to the top. The cream will rise to the top on this one. And I got another opportunity. So just like those guys are looking at it like it's last chance you, I hope that Drew Lock is looking at it no matter who we bring in, unless it's Deshaun Watson or a selection at number nine or higher.
Mm-hmm.
It's last chance you for Drew Lock as well.
What would you say is the outlook for Drew Lock if they did draft a quarterback nine or higher?
He's done. He's your backup quarterback or he's traded. One of the two.
Okay.
But there's no looking back.
The competition's over.
100%. Yeah, you draft somebody at number nine. He's your new franchise quarterback.
He is instantly the value of a quarterback you would have taken in the fourth round or later.
Drew Lock?
Yeah.
Sure.
That's who he is now.
Sure. He becomes a backup quarterback.
Right. It's not like he should have been drafted in the first round. At that point, if they take a quarterback, it's, he should have been drafted.
Well, I don't really care about that. I mean, I don't really care where he should have been drafted. I mean, he got drafted. He's on this team. All it is he becomes a backup quarterback.
Well, I'm just saying he has, in terms of how the team will look at him, it's that kind of priority. Low. Very low. They've moved on.
Sure. You just drafted his replacement.
Right.
You're no longer committed.
Right. So, I mean, you know, at that point, whatever. We trade them, we keep them, we whatever. It doesn't even matter. Well, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I love the press conference today. There was some other great stuff too. We can dig into it coming up here in the water cooler. But aside from the Drew Lock stuff, what were some of your other favorite topics about what was discussed today?
There was some Von Miller stuff. I thought most of it was just a relatively boring coach speak, to be honest with you.
You didn't like the Juwan James stuff?
That was some good stuff, sure. I mean, even that was relatively boring coach speak.
Well, I thought it was pretty fascinating. We'll play it for you. Plus Von and Justin Simmons and Kareem. How about the Bryce Callahan stuff? Somebody we haven't really discussed. Were they trying to give us a message with Bryce Callahan? Water cooler coming up next.
Does your company make safety a top priority? Alliance Safety, Colorado's premier supplier of safety equipment, is here to help make it one. As an authorized distributor of 3M safety products and home to all pro gear, Alliance has a vast inventory of personal protective equipment designed to keep your workers safe. including fall protection, safety glasses, protective gloves, and gas detection solutions. Visit AllianceSafetyInc.net. Call 303-388-8766 or stop by the Alliance Safety Warehouse off I-70 and Tower today to lock up all your safety needs.
It's time to take a trip to the water cooler.
Is this good for the company?
We need to talk about your TPS reports.
Did you see the memo about this?
We find it's always better to fire people on a Friday.
If you could just go ahead and make sure you do that from now on, that would be great.
Here's Tyler and D-Mac.
What would you say you do here?
I want to get into the more of the press conference from today with George Payton and with... And Vic Fangio, but I got two cool things. I'll give you a choice. We just got one. Boeheim ripping the short reporter or the Ravens overtime proposal.
Oh, well, listen, I know that you took the Boeheim one personally, so let's go with that one.
I tried to have fun with it, but it got a little personal on Twitter earlier today. So apparently there's a reporter for The Athletic that covers Syracuse. Let me just tell you, if you're working for The Athletic and you're stuck in Syracuse, I don't know how great things are going in your life. And you're talking to Jim Boeheim, who makes millions of dollars and been there for 45 years. And, you know, it's kind of the disparity is significant. And Boeheim is like, 6'6". He's a large man. And so, and it's on Zoom too, by the way. So it's not even in person. So apparently this reporter from The Athletic questioned his rotation. Like, he should be playing these two guys, not these two guys. And, now they've won a couple games in a row. They beat Clemson. They beat UNC the other night. So they're hanging in there. We'll see if they make the tournament or not. So they won a couple games in a row despite not following the reporter's suggestion. And here was Jim Boeheim.
I think we have gotten better as a team. And I think it's hard to go 9-7 in this league. I think it's a difficult league, very difficult. And I think these guys have done a great job this year.
Our next question is from
But if I had played Jesse and Kadari, we'd probably be 22-2 now. I just didn't see that. And I couldn't figure that out by myself after 45 years. I need a reporter to figure that out who's never played basketball and is 5'2".
It's so funny because the first part of it, I thought he was actually very respectful. I thought that he was having a actually very casual conversation with somebody.
A little snarky, but yes.
I originally didn't catch any snark in the original answer. Then he finished the answer and it got snarky real quick. Yes, yes.
And here's...
So short people unite. Everybody, everybody hate on Jim Boeheim at this point. And, D-Max got your back, short people.
I do, for sure. Because here's what happens with us, short people. Tall people always think...
I'm always looking down on you.
You're always looking down. Kevin's a tall guy, too. Kevin's like 6'4". You're 6'8". Richie's, taller than me. Taller than me. Middle person. You always think we're actually shorter than we really are. Which is absolutely true. Like, you probably do. Well, you probably know better because we've talked about it, but in general, you probably think somebody like me is 5'2". Right? But you have to understand.
Maybe 5'3". I don't know.
Right. Something demeaning like that.
Sure.
That's how tall people look at short people.
Right.
If you didn't know. And for a short person, seriously, every speck of height is meaningful. So we see a gargantuan difference between being 5'6" and 5'7". Whereas if you're 6'8" or you're 6'7", it's like, whatever. Even Kevin at 6'4", 6'3", it's all kind of there.
Well, I've noticed a little bit of a trend here lately because there's been a couple of short guy jokes fired at you of late. I fired one of them on Twitter about the real estate that Mark Schlereth took over on you and how he was doing you a favor because you just couldn't reach
now
the top of the board.
Now I can reach the board, right.
Right. And I have noticed here of late, I actually wasn't quite aware of it, but you are quite sensitive to the short jokes.
Oh, my God.
Am I not allowed to make short jokes anymore?
You can make them. I'm going to be sensitive about them.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Why in the world are you sensitive about a short joke?
Because... short people have been dealing with this crap all our lives. Short people can't date women as well as tall guys. Short guys don't get as much money as taller guys. That's been proven, by the way. How about that one? And short guys are just, it's a joke. We are not taken as seriously as taller guys.
So we have to fight against that. So you are officially sensitive about short jokes.
I'm officially sensitive.
Wow.
If you tell one, I'll just be like, oh, funny.
That's amazing.
I'm short.
I mean, all the trash you talk about people,
and I mean,
the way that you can judge a human being based off like one comment,
the way
that you just talked about the Athletic reporter and how things are just not going well in their life if they're working for the Athletic covering Syracuse.
Well, trust me on that one.
You get a little bit sensitive. You get your panties in a wad because you got a short joke.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. You come at me with short jokes and you'll see what happens.
Like, say it with your chest.
I did notice because, you know, I can throw you under the bus just about as much as I want to on Twitter, and you usually just roll with the punches and it's no big deal.
Yeah.
You didn't respond to my short joke.
Yeah.
And I knew then, like, wow, did I actually make him mad with a short joke?
You didn't make me mad. I just don't find it funny. I don't laugh at myself for being
short.
Hold on.
You know that, like, reality is the best humor, right? The best humor is based in reality.
Self-deprecating humor.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Oh, I know all of it.
Like, I'm a big, tall ogre. Big, tall ogre's a bunch of dummies. What happens when Scott the Huff does my voice?
Yeah.
Makes me sound like a big dummy.
Well,
why does he do that?
Yeah.
Because I'm a big, tall ogre.
Yeah.
Right? Do I get sensitive because he's making me sound dumb? No. I understand that comes with the territory of being a tall jock. People are going to call you dumb.
Yeah,
I don't get sensitive about
being
that.
Being tall is nothing bad about being tall. There's nothing bad.
What do you mean? He's calling me dumb.
Big deal.
He's
you're
making
tall.
Me sound like an idiot.
At the end
am
of
I
the
supposed to get sensitive about that?
Well, are you dumb?
No.
All right. Well, I am short. I mean, they're making fun of me about right. By the way, I'll give you an example. When people were ripping me about being fat, it was just like, yep, you got me. Like, I totally had to roll with that. You want to rip me about being ugly and not that good looking? I've seen a mirror. I get it. I'm not on TV for a reason. I'll roll with the punches on that.
But what? You can change being short or something?
So why would
you roll with the punches on those?
What'd you do to be tall?
Nothing. I did eat Miracle-Gro growing up.
Nothing. You were born.
No, I ate Miracle-Gro.
You were born.
I also drank cold milk.
My parents just should have told me I couldn't dunk. I would have played hockey, not basketball.
I cannot believe that you are actually sensitive about short jokes.
Short guys unite.
Like, I have to be careful about short jokes now?
No. I'm just going to say, go ahead. Say a short joke. Say, can't reach up.
Can't reach up.
That's funny, because I'm short.
Yeah, way
there
to take the
go.
Fun out of it. I love how you could judge anybody over anything, but you get offended by a short joke.
Yeah.
They're not even, like, calling you dumb. They're not even saying any sort of anything offensive.
I know I'm not dumb.
Wow.
And, you know.
Tyler, speak. Mm. Give me a cookie.
Those are funny.
Forget you, Scott. So funny. So funny, Scott.
Adrian Dater. Oh, I'm going to have a good short guy rant with Adrian Dater. He's a tall guy,
Where's
too.
Our short person song,
is,
by the way?
That's funny how that didn't get played. See? If I had a sense of humor about myself, I would have called for the
right.
short. I'm not even going to tell
Wouldn't
you
Wouldn't have been more
mine.
Fun if you had a sense of humor?
Probably. We'll talk to tall man Adrian Dater about the cheap shot to Nathan MacKinnon, and I'll suggest something that the NHL will never do, but they should. That's next.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Here's Tyler Palumbus and D-Mac.
Take off to the great white north. Take off. It's a beauty way to go. Take off.
All right, our guy Adrian Dater joins us, and I've been dying to talk to Adrian all day. You know, Tyler, the hockey guy's
right.
Here. And I don't even care if I get this dude's name wrong, but Joachim Blechfeld, how am I doing? Am I close there, Dater?
You know, I don't even know myself, T-Mac. I think it's Joachim Blechfeld.
Sure, good enough.
I know
whatever.
There's a different name going around on Twitter what Avs fans are actually calling him.
Yeah.
We won't say it here.
I can make the guess. Okay. Just quickly, before I totally destroy this guy, what level of player is he in the NHL?
He's a no-name guy who he got drafted a few years ago in the third round, and he's only played his fourth NHL game last night. So he's been one of those guys who's been in the minors for the Sharks.
Trying to make a name
years.
For himself.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
This guy is reprehensible. and the NHL. Now, what I'm talking about was this blatant attempt to take off Nathan MacKinnon, one of the top five players, arguably the top player in the NHL's head, and what is one of the dirtiest moves I've seen. And thank God it looks like Nathan's okay. First, let me start there. How's Nathan doing?
You know, I haven't heard anything different that he's not okay. The Avs were off today, and there's always kind of a cone of silence over the team right now in our COVID times when that happens. So I haven't had anybody tell me different today that he's not okay. Now, that doesn't mean that sometimes there's always a bit, little bit of a – sometimes there are bad surprises with the Avalanche medical-wise. So
okay.
Let's hold our breath a little bit more till tomorrow, and if I find out more, I'll let you guys know. Right. But
here's what I want to say, Adrian.
Yeah.
For a guy who's a junkie, barely hanging on, not really nothing guy, to suspend this guy makes no sense. What you need to do, NHL, is suspend somebody who's the equivalent of the player he was trying to take out. As well as him. If not, then it's time to just get Scott Parker back on the ice or somebody like Scott Parker and beat the crap out of the other team. If the NHL isn't going to regulate things, in my opinion, then we need to go to old school hockey because the enforcers had a role. Now, I wasn't a huge fan of that, but there was a role, so that doesn't happen. And in my opinion, the NHL needs to do something significant, and I can't even believe he's. I know it was a max penalty.
Suspend somebody else besides him.
That's
somebody
right.
That didn't do it.
Well, because that's what would happen in the good old days. That if you want to come at my guy, we're going to come at your guy, and everybody knows it. But right now, because of the way the NHL is, and it's fine. The game is better without fighting, in my opinion. But if that crap is going to happen, you've got to be able to do something besides just bringing back the enforcer. In my opinion, Dater, am I right?
Well, you know, I'm an Old Testament guy like you, D-Mac, but I'm older too. There's a New Testament way of hockey now, and then there's the Old Testament. I am an eye for an eye kind of guy. And, let's give the NHL a little credit here, though, D-Mac. They have tried to legislate these blindside hits out of the game. They used to be more frequent, I do believe, than they are now. They came up with a rule for this, specific hit, to outlaw it. And it really did get much more, tougher on these things. But when they do happen, yeah, there's sort of no recourse on the ice anymore, it seems like, for teams to sort of get back physically,
right.
At least. Otherwise, you're sort of A, taking a bunch of penalties and putting yourselves in the penalty box, and B, you know, the refs won't even allow it. You know, they give you all kinds of sanctions on top of that, third man in, that kind of thing. So, yeah, it's frustrating when you're a team that's always taking it like the Avalanche seems to, and nobody's doing anything about it except maybe a league flunky in New York giving a guy a two-game suspension. That doesn't feel very satisfying.
That's where I'm going.
Well, the Avs beat the crap out of them in the score, so good for them on that. And the team obviously responded well. Before the game, though, they had a players-only meeting. What went into that?
It was pretty much a garden variety team meeting from what I'm hearing. Consistency. Hey, boys, we've got to stop, thinking we can just throw our sticks on the ice and win. It's not like that. We've proven that. Jared Bednar, he wants this team to be he wants them to think of themselves as, the lunch pail gang, the harder working team. I don't know if the top players always like to think of themselves that way or think of themselves that way. They want to think of themselves as stars and goal scorers and having fun and skill and being better than everyone. So I think there's a little bit of a tug of war there in the team identity. What is the team identity? So I think coach wants them to be a blue-collar team, and the players sometimes get a little stubborn and want to be superstars. And so I think that's mostly what they talked about. They had great results last night. The question moving on here is, do they keep those lessons and be a harder-working team still, or do they want to go back to being superstars? We'll see starting tomorrow night.
I'm looking for the next time they play the Sharks so they can beat the crap out of them and respond. It's not actually for a while. Look at this. I'm looking it up, man. Are we not playing the Sharks? Oh, I got it. Friday, April 30th. Somebody, Blechard, Blechfeld, See, I don't even care about him because he's not even going to be on the team by then. It's got to be some other response. Man, I don't like it.
Bring back the old days. What's wrong with you guys? Bring it back. Lighting was awesome. Man, Scott Parker was awesome.
To me, it's one way or the other, dude. It's one way or the other. So, and you know what, Avs, if you do want to win and you're having team meetings and you think you're a little too pretty, who's that grimy guy?
Well, give Nathan MacKinnon his own Marty McSorley. You know, let's go. Bring it back. I don't care.
I don't know. Do they even have a guy like that, Adrian?
You know, they should. Not really.
You know what? Then bring up somebody from the freaking Colorado Eagles that night and let him shine. Let him do his thing. I saw Eagles highlights the other day. They had like a 9-minute fight on the ice. It was fantastic.
You know that what happens then, D-Mac, is all the the tree huggers are going to come out and say, oh, we can't have this.
Yeah, that's so, D-Mac. You know. For the record, D-Mac's advocating for fighting right now, but for the last year, we're always fighting about getting fighting out of the game.
I am one way or the other. I inherently, fighting slows the game down. Guys that are in the NHL that really shouldn't be, the best part of the hockey to me is speed and skating. And fighting and clogging things up like the stupid left-wing lock that the Devils did years and years and years ago is boring as crap. So let's get rid of things that slow the game down. But that being said, I know justice when I see it. And if the NHL isn't going to make a stand on something like this, the guy didn't even get thrown out of the game. I get it. Again, match penalty. I get it. But I go way back on this, Adrian. Like, I go back to the Bertuzzi hit on Moore, which to me still makes me sick to my stomach that Steve Moore's career was over and Bertuzzi still walked the earth and skated on ice again.
Yeah, well, Bertuzzi just got a DUI the other day, by the way. So I don't know if he's walking the earth as well as he was. But
well, you know what I mean.
You know what was similar, though, D-Mac, to the hit on MacKinnon last night was Steve Moore's hit on Marcus Naslin, which caused that whole thing. But it wasn't as bad as the hit on Moore never hit Naslin like MacKinnon got hit last night. This was to the head. But you're right. You know, that is, though, D-Mac, sort of how everything turned into a nightmare for hockey for a little while with the Bertuzzi thing. So I do think we need to be careful here when it comes to the, hey, let's go take off their heads kind of thing.
I agree.
Because that does lend, you know, that's how we got Steve Moore and Todd Bertuzzi in the first place. So it's a more, you know, it's a more nuanced thing. Generally, I agree that, you know, you can't be the team that just gets sand kicked in your face all the time or ice shaven in your face, as it were. You have to hit back sometimes. You have to stand up to the bully. You know, hockey is a game of intimidation a lot of times, and if you don't stand up to it, you can pay for it dearly on the ice and off. More specifically on the ice and the scoreboard. Look, I think the Avs are going to. I think they're aware of this. I think they're going to talk about it,
mm-hmm.
and maybe we will see a guy called up. I mean, the keeper Sherwood, a guy from they got who played earlier this year, is a guy who could go out there and throw some hits around.
Okay,
Logan O'Connor can do that. But yeah, you know, the days of Scott Parker going out there and taking on the whole bench are kind of over in this league.
My man, we always appreciate it. Thank you, Adrian. And we'll read you at ColoradoHockeyNow.com.
Okay, guys.
There's our guy, Adrian Dater, on the Johnson Auto Plaza hotline. All right, Tyler. Just venting. I am. I'm not for fighting in hockey. I'm not. But I do recognize the culture and the code of the sport.
Right.
I mean, I get it. And there is not another sport that exists where something similar to what happened last night on the ice would happen, and that sport wouldn't have severe punishments against the perpetrator. And that's why you just don't see that very often in other sports.
Yeah, you know, most sports have got a way to police themselves one way or the other, and hockey's always had a way to police themselves. Now the referees need to be the police, and if they're not going to do it, I guess you can call someone up.
Can you imagine in football, like, somebody's going to the sideline, they're not really in the play, and the opponent goes over to them, and the player doesn't have his helmet on, and he just goes and throws an arm or a shoulder or something at his head as hard as he can? I mean, seriously, what would happen? We saw what happened. With Myles Garrett and Mason Rudolph,
is what would happen? I mean, seriously, you know what happened with Myles Garrett and Mason Rudolph was definitely in an extreme situation. The majority of the time, it doesn't get to that point because the majority of the time, the referees just they find it, they call the whistle, and they kick the guy out of the game.
Speaking of extremes, how about Vic Fangio today? My guy. We'll talk about George Payton and Vic Fangio and what they had to say. Coming up, Football at 4 is next.